is.
So Mark Vandermeer is in. Kylie Wong is in. Good morning, guys.
So
how are you?
So he stole my spot, but just for the season, right?
Just for the season, yes.
I mean, we pulled up together in the garage. I was like, he stole my spot.
Right. I even took his parking spot. Like, yeah, multiple ways. Like, everything. Like, he was, like, very methodically, you know, going down the thing.
It's a hostile takeover.
It
That's
is
what
a
it
hostile
was.
Takeover.
Yes.
So we have an announcement
we do.
For everybody.
All right, here's the announcement. Are you guys ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, Entercom Radio, Sports Radio 610 will continue to be the home of the Houston Texans for at least another decade through 2027. It's being announced. Of course, Sarah Frazier, Senior Vice President, Market Manager here. Jamie Roots, President of the Houston Texans. They made the deal. And a lot of people involved. Greg Grissom, of course, over at the Texans. But we are thrilled to be partners for another decade at least. And you guys think about this. This station has had every snap of Houston Texans football from the outset. No other media outlet has carried more Texans. I mean, it's all the Texans, really. And nobody can make that claim. Sports Radio 610 can make that claim. The Bull, of course, 100.3 FM, Entercom Radio. It's a great partnership, and it will continue for at least another decade. And we are
as long as America's still around.
Yes.
As long as
the country exists,
yes.
We
yes.
will
for
be
as
on.
As long as America exists.
Is there an act of God clause?
No, we could be taken over by another nation and still broadcast. Yeah.
Somebody could, like, we could become communized. Yeah.
They got to assume the contract.
All property rights
exactly.
will be voided.
It's written in there. They got to assume this.
That's good. I can stop putting out feelers to other stations now that I'm starting to wonder about what would happen exactly. So, like, sorry about it, everybody.
So
I'm not doing it.
By 2027, that's 25 years from 2002. That's a long time, especially in this day and age when teams flip back and forth stations and all
I'll
that.
Still be here, baby.
I do not doubt it whatsoever.
I'll be on the air.
Vandermeer will be a brain in a jar with
And you think about how far the deal's come. You know, obviously the first 10 years it was a specific way, and then for the last 6 years we're in year 7 of the new arrangement where we have Texans Radio on Sports Radio 610, and this is really unprecedented the way we do it. Now, some teams have tried and failed to do it the way we do it together.
Who failed?
As a partner. The Dolphins failed.
Oh,
the
really?
The Dolphins failed with their nightly show. They just couldn't pull it off. This is a credit to Sports Radio 610 and Entercom because the partnership wasn't good. They just didn't have good partners, and the Dolphins, it just didn't work out the way it's working out here so well for everybody, and that's a credit to both parties, just having a great partnership and working forward.
One quick follow-up before we get to all of what you guys saw at practice this week, especially with the 49ers in town. Any changes as far as, like, what people should expect, like the 6 o'clock show you guys on 8 to 10 on Mondays?
I think it's changed from the get-go.
It has.
You know what I mean? We're always trying to make it better, and I think at Fuddruckers this year, the Fuddruckers Texans Player Show, which will start the day after Labor Day at Fuddruckers, because that would make a lot of sense. We're going to have DJ Reader on. We're going to have a lot of great players this year. I think that we've taken that thing up to another level, and now we're going to bounce
around.
You
stole DJ Reader. We're trying to get DJ Reader on weekly. You son of a duck.
Well, yeah,
I'm happy for you.
I don't think that was the conflict.
Oh, all right.
I'm going to leave it at that.
No, not every week.
Never mind.
Yeah, not every week, yeah. So you have a rotating
set. Is it going on somewhere else?
The defensive line is loaded. You know, some years it's like, the offensive line, they've got all the personalities. And these guys do have good personalities, but they're new, right? They're new to Houston, some of them, and it's a new group that they're
mixing.
Some
of them might not end up being that good.
The D-line is so good. Brandon Dunn is so good. Christian Covington, obviously, so good. Watt is Watt. I mean, this group is really tight. I think this is the tightest position group on the team.
Right? Yeah, really. And especially since they're deep enough that I think one of those, I'll be surprised if at least one defensive lineman isn't traded away for something at the end of training camp.
Really?
They've got more viable they've got viable defensive linemen. I'm not saying they're all superstars or anything, but they've got guys that can actually contribute
when you look
on
the
teams.
Like, not bubble guys, but when you look at keeping 6, right?
Yeah.
And then you can go like Joel Heath and Angelo Blackson, who's starting to come around really well. And, you know, obviously you look at your first 4 or 5 guys, they're really solid.
And Covington's playing really well. This Blackson dude, who I didn't know of his existence until last year, late
97.
Last year, right? He's looked good every time I've seen him.
Kylie, had the sack last week.
You and I were hang out yesterday watching some of the practice. What were your main takeaways from yesterday?
So, Javi, you know, I spent a lot of my time actually watching the defense, like, because that's what I was really, really fascinated, and particularly the linebackers and the secondary, you know, so watching kind of the safeties. It's funny, the first sense I got from it, kind of like you guys were talking about with the defensive line group as a fun group, it seemed like just as a whole, the team is a fun group of guys. You can tell they genuinely like playing with each other. and they were having fun with it. You know, there were a number of examples where you saw veterans coaching up rookies, like, and really taking the time to explain, hey, look, you can do this better in this scenario. You know, one of them was Ryan Griffin with Jordan Akins yesterday.
Yep.
Just spending time and just going through and walking through it. But you saw it in the secondary as well. So I thought that was really good to see, because look, at the end of the day, you do play better for people you like. You just work together. You communicate better. You're kind of all in it together. And so that was really fun. And how much fun they were having with it. It didn't seem like a chore. It didn't seem like the training camps me and Seth maybe had participated in, where we were literally dragging ourselves off the field.
Yeah.
They were genuinely excited to be out there. And so I thought that was really fun. And then the next thing I was looking at is just how are they managing, you know, just the talent. Because we agree that they're deep. They have three inside linebackers that all could play. They have three safeties who we think are all going to see the field in different situations. And it was interesting because there was actually a package to where the three safeties were all on the field at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, to where. And so I think that what you're seeing is you're seeing a lot of versatility among the defense, where they're going to be able to match anybody in any scenario and put some wrinkles out there that's going to be really fun to watch.
It's what's so strange that safeties have been devalued this year is that it's happening at the same time while a lot of defenses are starting to play three safeties at a time on dime. Like, so I don't, like, safeties are being used more than they ever have, and yet at the same time they want to try to treat them like they're a dime a dozen.
It is amazing. I never understand why safeties don't get paid.
Yeah.
Right? Because those are the guys.
It's weird.
They're the playmakers. I mean, yes, corners, you need lockdown corners. You need, you know, it's so difficult to stay with a wide receiver. But these safeties are kind of the ball hawks, and they're the leaders of the defense.
Well, they got to understand everything, right?
Right.
And they're got, you know, as far as three safeties out there at a dime or whatever, they're guys who can cover guys, right? Sometimes it's, we need a guy who can cover a guy and put him back there, and he sees a lot, and he knows where to go, especially when things kind of break down.
Without question. Another thing, though, I just, you know, casual observations. Like, I love to see, you know, the Honey Badger and kind of his role on this team. I mean, one of the things that was surprising to me was he was the first guy in every line.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's just a very good, you know, just leadership type role. And you can see that the secondary, they just kind of they molded. And you have some guys that have been here for a long time. You know, Jonathan Joseph is a tremendous leader, but was traditionally always the guy who was first in line.
That's what it was.
And so it was interesting to see that dynamic as well.
That's almost universal among people we talked to from LSU, was that, you know, obviously he was known for his big plays and he was known for his issues off the field, but on the field and in the locker room, they said he was a leader from like the time he was a freshman, that he was leading and it was a real leadership, not just like him trying to. So he is just that natural. He's, so many times guys are brought in and like when you bring in somebody for leadership to try to correct a problem or something, it doesn't usually work out. It's got to be a bunch of leaders on your team. You've got to have that culture. That is a really good locker room guy, I think.
Yeah.
And to see him working with young guys from different positions too, and working with guys from the offense. One of the young receivers was talking about this, about how he works with Tyrann Mathieu all the time on learning what the defenders are looking at and exactly just all those kinds of things. You see that a lot out there. He's all over the place.
And Mark, they do that with Jonathan Joseph too. You know, offensive players always asking him. DeAndre Hopkins always asking him what he's seeing in his game and how he covers guys so Hopkins can figure out different ways to get open. And that's good. That's good complimentary coaching on the field.
Oh, without question. I mean, that's a wealth of knowledge. That's stuff you honestly can't get from coaches.
Yeah.
I mean, in reality, really, there's a lot of stuff where if you want to really figure out, like, how am I going to defeat this BIM block, right? This where they kind of are faking one thing and they do something else. You have to ask the player. You have to ask a veteran player who actually executes it very well.
I think most coaches will say that they want the players to ultimately coach the team. We want you guys to coach the team so we don't have to do so much. And you're right. You know more because you're in it. You're on the field.
There's the nuances. There's the scheme stuff that you just can't get away with without the coaches. But then there's the nuances of how to actually execute it. There was actually this Keenan Turner. You remember him back in the day with the 49ers?
Yeah, sure.
He was a coach. Love the guy. He was amazing. he was a terrible coach.
Yeah.
Right? He was an awful coach. And he was at Stanford with me at the time. And the reason why is because he was such a good athlete. He would just be like, he would get to these guys, I don't know. Just get around them. Yeah. Just like, you know, and he was, and so the guys were not nearly as talented as him, and he couldn't figure out. But, you know, when you blend a coach and then, you know, the veterans who've seen it, who've done it, and can, I mean, you can get that to an exact science.
What is it? It is. It's hard sometimes to take three inside linebackers and say, hey, you can use all these guys in different situations. Because then you have the problem of, okay, getting guys on and off the field.
For sure.
And that's where I guess I wonder is exactly how do you see it looking? I guess it's going to be different from week to week, exactly how much Zach Cunningham and Dylan Cole play versus Bernard McKinney.
I do. I think it is going to be very personnel based and very situational. So there are some times they are all going to see field. They're all going to see reps, right? Because when I was watching those guys and I was really just digging in and watching, BMAC did exactly what you want out of them. Very first play of when the two teams came together, he goes through the B gap and just absolutely smoked their running back, you know, for like a 3-yard loss and just sets the tone. I mean, that's kind of what you paid the guy to do. He's right. The tone setter. He's fun. He's energetic. He's a great communicator, but he just went out there and set the tone for the defense. Then you watch Zach Cunningham going sideline to sideline, but just locking down guys. I mean, you know, he can just run. And yes, Dylan Cole can do that too. But what Dylan Cole really excels at is he seems to just know intuitively what to do in passing concepts, especially when it comes to zone, when they're playing zone. And so you're seeing him just kind of almost diagnose a play in front of him and turn and run to a spot. And be in the right spot. And that's something that's very unusual for a young linebacker. That's kind of why I was so curious when I was interviewing. How did you learn this? Like, how do you find yourself in these
positions?
What
did he say?
He said he does.
Or is this a tease?
Find out.
We're going to play that next. Mark, real quick question. Yeah. The city of San Francisco. So your brother lives there.
My brother lives there.
What do you think of San Francisco?
Well, and numerous former Texans organization members live there who I've talked to this week. And the consensus is, I don't care how much money you make, it's expensive, man. It's a really expensive place to live. I think it's the most beautiful city in America. It really is. I mean, I think Houston is the greatest city in America. But as far as pure aesthetics go, I mean, San Francisco, come on. The views are unbelievable.
They are.
But you're paying, you know, 4, 5, 6 times that whatever you'd pay here to live
there. It's crazy.
I mean, the affordability here is unmatched for the kind of city it is.
Because a lot of cities like New York's expensive, but New York's big. You can go all over the place. San Francisco's small by definition. That's what frightens me.
I think
about
San Francisco might be more expensive than New York.
I believe
it
is.
There's some stats out and per foot or whatever.
Mark, Sean and I will catch up with you tomorrow in advance of the game.
Looking forward to it. And congratulations to both parties, Entercom and the Houston Texans. Another decade of Texans football right here, boys.